You might be familiar with communication milestones, but what about preverbal skill development? Laura Brown is on today to discuss this topic, provide a refresher on communication milestones, and explain the benefits of using gestures in early intervention. Hey there, and welcome to the Speechy Side Up podcast. My name is Benita Litvak, and I am so grateful you're here. I'm an ASHA-certified speech-language pathologist, author, and augmentative and alternative communication consultant who is obsessed with helping SLPs like you stop reinventing the wheel and connect with other SLPs in the trenches. Have you ever wondered how other SLPs seem to be doing it all with ease? Well, around here, you'll get to hear firsthand how SLPs are really getting things done while keeping evidence-based practice and self-care in mind. Think of this as a coffee date with your SLP friends. Get ready to be challenged and encouraged while we learn together. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Speechy Side Up podcast. If this is your first time listening, then thanks for coming. This podcast is produced every week for your enjoyment. You can also follow along on Instagram at Speechy Side Up. All links are in the show notes. Now let's get into the show. Today I'm joined by Laura Brown, a speech language pathologist that specializes in pediatrics. Laura is an author and private practice owner, and she found a niche in providing therapy to children birth to age 3, and that's how Mommy and Me Milestones was born. She is passionate about empowering other parents with knowledge and excitement for early communication skills. Hey, Laura.
Hi, Benita. Thank you so much for having me on today.
My pleasure. I'm so excited to hear from you and learn more about early intervention. So before we get started, let's kind of paint a picture for the listeners, share how you got started and where you're at now.
Sure. Okay. So as you mentioned, I am an early intervention SLP. I am also a mom of 2 boys. My oldest will be 3 in a couple months. And I have a 2-month-old as well. We added a new baby back in May. So that's been fun and crazy. I started my SLP journey in the schools a little over 10 years ago, working primarily with children with autism and children who are deaf and hard of hearing. From there, I married into the military and we started moving around a lot. I have been an SLP in 4 different states and many different pediatric settings. And I actually started my one-man private practice when I became a mom. I really needed that flexibility that the private practice could offer, trying to balance work life with having kids. So currently I am in Georgia and I am on maternity leave with my little one. Which is actually just everybody's at home kind of leave with everything that's going on. But I'm just trying to soak up every second. He is already growing up so fast, and it's been a lot of fun. And I have to tell you congratulations because I know you are also expecting here soon.
Thank you so much, and congrats to you guys as well. That's so exciting, and I'm sure you've gotten so much time for cuddles and just soak it all up.
Yes, it's been wonderful. It's been a little different because everybody's home, not just me and the baby, but we're making it work.
Oh, so your husband and your other son are home. Well, obviously your other son.
Correct. Yeah. But we have like barely left the house since, you know, March. So.
Yeah. Oh man, this year is definitely going to be one to remember. That's for sure.
Definitely.
Well, let's talk about your expertise. So if we're kind of talking to SLPs who aren't familiar with early intervention, or we have parents who are listening to this, why is it so important to understand communication milestones?
So we have to, the communication milestones are really important for both parents and therapists to understand, because it's good to know what to expect as your child is growing up and as you're waiting for important things like them starting to walk or talk. And as SLPs, we have to understand typical development so that we can identify delays and disorders. And for the most part, children go through the same progression of skills, building up to those important milestones. So if we know the milestones and we know the expected progression of skills, we can really target the skills that are missing, and we can build off of the skills that kids already have while we work up to our therapy goals or targets. As an early intervention therapist, the most common presenting concern I see is my child isn't talking. And we know that can be for a lot of different reasons. So that takes a lot of detective work. But we also know first words don't just kind of appear out of thin air. There is a lot happening leading up to that moment. There's a lot of building blocks that it takes to get there for a child to be ready to say those first words.
Absolutely. Yeah, such good points. So what is your go-to tools for evaluating that?
So when... It depends on the child and the presenting concern. So I am part of the state contract for early intervention. So as far as a formal assessment, we use the DAYC, the developmental assessment of young children, and that is a 5-area assessment. But I also utilize a lot of different caregiver questionnaires and informal interactions with the child, and then observations of the parent and the child interacting to kind of see, based on those presenting concerns, where, what the areas that might be kind of missing or that might need a little help or support, what those areas might be.
I love that. Do you have a go-to resource that you like to give parents regarding the communication milestones?
So there's a lot of great information out there. The CDC has a great website for all 5 areas. I have a resource on my website that is more specific to the communication milestones. And it's, I think, important when you're looking at those, whether you're a parent or a therapist, understand. When you're looking at milestones, there is a large range of average. So you have maybe an average skill, but you also have kind of the point where you might have a cause for concern. So kind of understanding the difference between those is really important. And that is something that I highlight when I talk about communication milestones with parents and pediatricians, for that matter.
Such a great point. So what should SLPs know about preverbal skill development?
Okay, so I created my own little mnemonic device for this. So I call it the 4 I's before first words. It's just kind of a way for me to kind of organize my thoughts when I'm looking at a child. And those 4 areas are interaction, input, imitation, and intent. And when I'm evaluating a child who's not using spoken words yet, or maybe using a really limited amount of spoken words, I'm looking at each of those areas to determine where the missing piece is. So I'm going to be looking at that child thinking, what are their interaction skills like? Are they socially interested in others? Are they able to be engaged in play? Do they have, are they demonstrating that joint attention? And second, I'm thinking, is there a problem understanding language? Are they able to understand those common words and phrases? Are they able to follow simple directions? Next, I'm thinking about imitation skills. Are they able to imitate actions? Are they able to imitate vocalizations? And then last, and a really important one, are they demonstrating communicative intent? Are they able to use other ways like eye gaze or vocalizations or gestures to communicate purposefully and to try to communicate a message with a communication partner or an adult?
I love those. And I appreciate the way to remember it, the 4 I's. I think that's really great. Is that in your book? Because I know you're an author.
That is not. That's something I've kind of just talked a little bit about on social media, a little bit on Instagram, but I am working on a resource for that. So that could possibly be available at some point. But I really think about those four things about as being kind of pieces of the puzzle when we're looking at readiness for spoken language. So if you have a child who's not where we want them to be, you can kind of identify which area or areas aren't there yet, and we can use that to guide the interventions that we're choosing with that child.
Yeah, I love that. Thank you. That's really great. So what interventions have you found to be effective for preverbal children?
So if we think about this in terms of those four components that I just talked about, the four I's, one presentation we see really commonly in early intervention is your classic late talker. This is a child who has all of those skills with the exception of verbal imitation. So they're the ones whose parents come to us and they say they can understand everything. They're using lots of gestures, they're trying to communicate with me, but they're just not able to use spoken words. So for them, the focus is really building those imitation skills and shaping and developing those skills into to the point where you can get them to start imitating some simple words. Moving on, if you have a child who is having difficulty with the interaction or the understanding input, I really like to work on training parent responsiveness. So teaching parents how to be detectives with their children and really look at them as a communication partner. So imitating what they're doing, following their lead, rather than trying to direct them, sitting back and letting them show us what they're interested, showing us what they want to play with. And that kind of goes along with tuning in to their nonverbal cues. So paying attention to all of the ways that they're communicating with us that aren't words. So whether they're using eye gaze or gestures. And the last thing that really goes along with that, and this is one of my favorite things to teach parents, it's so simple but so effective, is once we are able to tune into those nonverbal attempts to communicate, we're going to work on mapping those attempts with language. So that is called linguistic mapping. So when we are paying attention to the ways our child is communicating us, maybe by coming over and pulling our hand. So instead of just going along with the child, we're going to map that. We're going to say, come on, mommy, or stand up, mommy. If you have a child going to the back door and, trying to play with the knob and get outside. Instead of just opening the door and going out with them, you could say, let's go outside, or I want to play. So, and that mapping can be such an effective tool for building receptive language and giving them a great model for expressive language to develop.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. I'm glad you said model, because as you were describing mapping, I was like, oh, that's like a good example of modeling. I love that. Mm-hmm. Is there a phrase length that you should be cognizant of when you're doing the mapping, or are you just kind of like speaking to them about the world around them?
So there's a couple things that make linguistic mapping different from just what I would call like generic modeling language. And phrase length is definitely something you want to pay attention to. So keeping things really short and simple. And I like to say like under 4 to 5 word sentences. But also using the modeling the language in the words of the child. You're going to use their voice. So you're going to say, if they are pulling you over to the front door, you're going to say, I want to go outside. So you're modeling for them in their voice, and that takes out some of the work that they have to do when you think about what's involved when you model and then trying to have to reverse pronouns and all of that. When you're modeling in their voice, it's ready to go for them to just model and generalize that right away.
Wow, that's really fascinating. Thank you for sharing like those differences between modeling and linguistic mapping.
Of course. And linguistic mapping is also a research-based intervention that works great for kids with autism. I wanted to mention that because we know those kids have trouble with pronouns and they have trouble with kind of making that change and hearing a model and then applying it to themselves. So that's a great intervention if you have a child you're working with that has autism or red flags for autism. That is a really good one to think about.
Okay. I want to go back to the, I know you said under 4 to 5 words. Do you find that using like a 4 to 5 word phrase in their voice is too much sometimes? Do you have to scale it back to where it's like a single word, or is it pretty typical and the research says to use like a more concrete phrase?
So it depends on the child. Single words are a really great place to be if you have a child who's not using any spoken words. So instead of saying like, I want to go outside, just saying outside, like you kind of were getting at right there. And you know, if you can't say it in one word, saying it in two or three, but yeah, single word modeling is really important and really effective for our kids who aren't using any words yet. So that's a really good point. I'm glad you clarified that.
That's okay. Yeah. I appreciate like you entertaining me asking these questions, because I do like to get to the bottom of it, because we don't have a ton of time, but I want people to take away like what we really, you know, what you really mean. And I think that's great that we expand on it. Do you happen to know the researchers or any resources that people can look to learn more about linguistic mapping?
So there's that is kind of a term that's more like embedded in the research. So I've read a lot about this particular strategy on like the Informed SLP. Okay. She's had some great articles about this. And then it's also something you can kind of search in scholarly articles and search on ASHA. I have a resource on my website about this that is just kind of like provides some simple examples of how to do this. So yeah, any of those would kind of be a good place to start.
Okay, great. Thank you. I appreciate that. So we know gestures can be really valuable in early intervention. How do you incorporate them as well as sign language in your therapy?
That's a really good question. And that kind of loops back around to, I didn't really talk about that fourth area for interventions, which is intent. And we know that prior to using spoken words, there are really two main ways that a child can demonstrate that they have communicative intent. And the first one is eye gaze and joint attention. And the second one is gestures. So both of those, depending on the child and where they're at can be great targets of intervention. And specifically, I like to incorporate gestures and simple signs as a way to augment a child's communication skills. So when a child is pre-verbal or minimally verbal, using those gestures and signs to help them communicate for a variety of purposes. So I'm really focused when I'm picking targets for signs or gestures, thinking about what is functional for this child, and also trying to focus on core type words. So functional words that can be used across a variety of contexts. So an example of that, and these are really popular as far as getting started, I think, with most SLPs, but signs like more and all done and help. Those are signs that they're very functional. They help a child communicate to meet a goal. They're very purposeful, and they can also be used across many activities in many contexts. So that's something I really like to think about. As far as using signs to communicate, you can also use them to replace less desirable behaviors in a child. So if a child's throwing food when they're done with their snack, you can kind of block the throwing, and then we're going to teach them to say, all done. Or if they're grabbing something from their sibling's hand, we're going to teach them to sign please or want instead of grabbing. So using those to replace less desirable behaviors that are happening in lieu of spoken communication. And getting back to that mapping, that's a tool you can also use here. So if you have a child who is maybe going over to the pantry and they're trying to reach up and get their own snack, we can use mapping with signs as well. We can sign and say eat and help try to embed that additional language in that act, so that maybe next time, instead of just going to get it, they can really communicate with us using that sign instead of just the non-verbal behavior.
I love that. Those are great tips, and I appreciate you sharing those. Thank you.
Yes, of course.
Do you find that parents sometimes are like aversive to learning the gestures or signs, or most of the time they're pretty open to it?
So it's really interesting, because more I find that parents are really open to it. I do have some that are not as open to it at first, but with a little bit of talking through the why, which is we're developing communication skills and we're getting them ready to talk, and this is part of that process. Usually I can get most parents on board, definitely explaining, you know, addressing the common concern that this will kind of impede spoken language development. And we know that's not true. We know that all types of AAC and augmentation of communication, those all, they do not inhibit spoken language, and many times they promote that development of spoken language. So once I can kind of explain that, I can usually get most parents on board and kind of participating in this intervention. So I've mostly had really good success with it.
Okay, good. And how early are you introducing the baby sign?
So this depends on the child. With a child like a late talker, for example, who's coming in with all of the foundational skills, they can start signs on day one. And that's a great way for them to have a way to communicate while you work on building more spoken words. But if you have a child who's coming in who needs more foundational skills, you might need to work on that interaction piece and getting them input and getting that some of those more foundational skills before they're going to be ready to sign. So it just really, it depends on the child.
Yeah, great point.
I have an SLP secret to share with you. I can never remember how to pronounce dysphagia. I literally had to transcribe it in IPA today, and I probably still did not pronounce it correctly. Why am I sharing this with you? Because it's nearly impossible to keep up with all of the areas in our field, and you're not expected to know it all. However, if you want to learn more about feeding and swallowing disorders, then you'll be happy to know that we're doing a podcast series on this topic very soon. The series kicks off with a pod course on using a positive approach to behavioral feeding disorders. Our guest speaker is Dr. Deirdre Muldoon, a professor at the College of St. Rose, and her episode is even available for ASHA CEUs through TASL Continuing Education. And members get early VIP access starting January 1st, 2021. That means you don't have to wait until the episode airs on this podcast to listen. Dr. Muldoon is an SLP and board-certified behavior analyst, so who better to talk about the latest research on behavioral feeding disorders? Learn behavioral management techniques for dysphagia and more in this pod course. Head to tasseltogether.com or click on the link in this episode description. Then check out the courses tab to find the course titled Fun with Food, A Positive Approach to Behavioral Feeding Disorders to learn more.
So before we wrap up, you create resources, you're an author. What are some of the resources that you have out there so people are aware?
So I have a website. It's mommyandmemilestones.com, and that is where my resources live. So it's kind of like an online storefront there. I have a resource called the Practical Baby Sign Handbook, and that is that is a resource that can be used by both parents and SLPs, and it is kind of a guide on how to introduce gestures and signing, and it's very comprehensive in terms of how to introduce signs, what signs to introduce, and really taking you through those exact steps. The other resource I have available are the early childhood sign language vocabulary sets. And those are, that is kind of what it sounds like. It is a vocabulary resource for signing that I kind of created with early intervention therapists in mind for people who really understand already how to use signing, but just kind of would like to have those like kind of attractive posters of the signs. And then it has like a QR code with the videos of the signs. So you being able to use that to kind of pass off to parents to kind of show them what to work on and exactly kind of how to do it.
I love that. Thank you so much. So
thank you.
Are not familiar with you, where should they go to connect with you?
The best place to connect with me is on social media, on Instagram at Mommy and Me Milestones, and Facebook is also Mommy and Me Milestones. So you can find me either of those. I like to share lots of information about everything from birth to three as far as communication development, and even a little bit about parenting toddlers and some information on that stuff too.
Okay, great. Well, thank you so much, Laura. This has been really wonderful, and I will probably be definitely connecting with you once my little one is born if I have any questions. I appreciate it.
Yes, absolutely. You can definitely reach out. I would love that.
I appreciate it. Thank you again, and until next time.
Of course. Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. By the way, have you joined the SSU crew yet? By joining, you get access to the free goods section on our website, plus podcast updates, special event notifications, and therapy inspiration. You can sign up at bit.ly/joinSSU crew, all lowercase, or just find the link in this episode description. Also, don't forget to take a screenshot of this episode so that you can always refer back to it and share it on social media if you really love the topic. Take care and remember to always fill your speechy side cup first before you can pour into others.